Hello, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. A great support group here in Liverpool, and it's lovely to see all the work you're doing and all the questions you're asking and how you're all working together. It's incredibly relevant and important. I'm going to start by running through some slides, which probably all of this, it's preaching to the choir. But I suppose it frames just the position that this project tries to sit within, which is in a way an answer to what Carol was saying earlier, which is about this massive swing area of women who might initiate breastfeeding but might not, but might move to mixed feeding, and what are the cultural factors in that decision-making process. Essentially, I'm an artist, so I'm not answering those questions. What I'm trying to do is occupy that space and initiate conversations between research and the actual mothers and the whole community that surrounds those mothers. So a little bit about that. So I don't think I need to run through this with you, but in some contexts I do need to run through these statistics. It's quite surprising who doesn't really know them as well. So a lot of my work is all about the visual culture. So I very specifically looked when I started this project at my own cultural inheritance. I'm an Irish Catholic. I was not breastfed. I grew up in a culture where I heard about breastfeeding first of all when I was about 10 years old, and I thought it was a joke. I mean, I remember the entire group of us insisting that this was a lie. So I had never even seen anthropological images of women breastfeeding. Later on, when I studied art history, I saw Madonna's breastfeeding, but that literally is my cultural inheritance of breastfeeding. And I thought it was quite interesting to put together how complex I thought the picture was, just personally for me, in terms of imagery and how I might identify as someone who breastfeeds, because I think that there's a lot of similarities in the rest of the UK. That's not to say all cultures, it's different in different community groups. So I suppose partly how I see myself as an artist is to also bridge this gap between the research that's out there and the lived experience of parents and children, I suppose. And quite often, the way I see it, and certainly the way I saw it as a mother, was that these two things were moving apart rather than coming together. And I'll just talk a little bit about where I think that is happening from. So, for pregnancy, as I mentioned, these were the two images that I had seen of breastfeeding. I think we can quite easily analyse these and say that both these women are not located within my culture. And they are not, you know, this lady on the left is in the present. This lady on the right is in the past, very, very far into the past. And you could say that as a visual image of breastfeeding, that was the last time that breastfeeding was a predominant image within European culture. Anecdotally, quite interestingly, the breastfeeding Madonnas disappeared with the rise of the printing press and the circulation of pornographic images. So we actually have a sort of 400-year-old legacy of technology sexualizing something that's completely normal, and that disappearing from our visual culture. So I suppose one of the questions is, how do we bring it back successfully? As a pregnant mother, these are the kind of images that I saw. I think a lot of maybe people in the medical professions might look at these and think they're quite benign, maybe quite positive looking. But as someone who really looks at images, I would point out certain things here. First of all these women are photographed in the daytime.
Yeah.
So that's number one, totally inaccurate.
Yeah, they're all happy, amazing, don't they?
And they're all clothed.
They all look terrible.
They're all clothed.
They're
no skin to skin.
That's the first thing I think.
Yeah.
They're all alone. They're all alone. Yeah. That's the other thing. I mean, I have to say my series is also women sitting alone, but these are stock images which are kind of used and circulated around actually quite a lot, the formula industry, but many other places. These women are typically young, they're smiling, they look relaxed, they're in a kind of pyjama-type dress. They're at home. They're all at home. They're all sunlit and at home. So it gives you the idea that breastfeeding as an experience, this is like the naive pregnant woman is looking at this, is highly idealised. It's something that you do at home with this in this loving, beautiful relationship, smiling at your baby in the daytime, wearing your pyjamas on the sofa. And that, as we all know, isn't really the reality. And that's very much what's brought into the advertising of formula. Actually, what formula companies like to do, I notice, is they like to undress women a little bit so that they play on that anxiety about being undressed in public. So they always show women with their tops down, breastfeeding at home, and then say, you know, this is the point at which we're going to follow, you know, following on from here. They show a slightly undressed woman so that it plays on that anxiety, I think. After birth, the visual culture that I tapped into was medical diagrams. I mean, I had horrendous problems with a tongue-tied baby and everything you can imagine, abscesses and operations and thrush and everything. And I obviously had to learn a hell of a lot very quickly. I would say I basically did an A-level in breastfeeding in about a week. And I saw a lot of Instagram brelfies and I saw a lot of diagrams. I found the diagrams to be really hard to deal with. It was like a very dehumanised way of looking at something that's incredibly intimate. And I found the brelfies to be very empowering, but they are women quite often without heads. They're women with just bits.
Yeah.
It's quite sad that they're photographing themselves, that nobody else is photographing them. And typically the women that I photograph will say that's the only time I've ever been photographed breastfeeding, even if they've breastfed 3 children over a period of 10 years. Many women will never, ever have a document of that act of breastfeeding that child, despite the amount of time that they've put into it. So what that suggests is within our culture, breastfeeding is very, very undervalued. So a lot of this is my hypotheses, and you can... you can decide whether or not you agree with them, but I've spoken to an enormous number of women now. Essentially, I'm undertaking research, and I myself would be described as a new generation of women raised on formula by working mothers. That is basically me, and those women are often part of a post-feminist generation who identify strongly with work roles. So if you just Google online images of women, what you see is a lot of very empowering images of women sitting around board tables and women leaning over computers and women looking like they're having just a, you know, a good time, but they're out there in the workplace. And you don't really see a lot of images of women pushing pushchairs, reading their phone, or, you know, getting a kind of coffee and looking exhausted. And I mean, a lot of what I see on the street isn't really represented in that common sort of massive machinery of imagery that we have of women. But also, we do identify with strong work roles, and we are under economic pressure to go back to work and so on. And this has led to a break with traditional intergenerational learning about child development. I mean, I don't know where we want to situate that break. It's probably a long, ongoing process since the Industrial Revolution, but especially since the 1960s. And that in itself isn't problematic, but I see it as being a sort of grassroots or sort of soil level basis for what I'm going to talk about next. So our idea of what breastfeeding is, I'm just talking broadly here, and like I say, you can disagree with me if you like, but I would say it's very shaped by marketing and advertising and a massive industry of baby manuals. And breastfeeding is rarely portrayed in these contexts as a solution to child behavioural issues. And breastfeeding actually is quite often demonised and portrayed as the problem in a lot of these manuals. So I'm talking about the Gina Ford kind of books. You know, when you were saying about parents swapping books, I actually thought you meant swapping parenting manuals, because that's the books I see parents swapping. And certainly when I had a child, that's immediately the book that landed on my table. And it wasn't until I did the peer support mentoring that I learned that actually in the NHS these books are really frowned upon. And now I'd say that to mothers, and they also do not know that. So there is actually a line of authority out there, an authoritative voice that women are listening to. and actually their partners as well, crucially, and that has, I would say, possibly equal or maybe even greater power than the messages they're getting from health professionals, and it's hugely problematic. So, yeah, a lack of understanding of the role of breastfeeding in parenting children. And these two things, I feel, have led to a cultural basis for very poor preparation for breastfeeding, a lack of understanding of what breastfeeding might, in fact, be useful for and what it might look like and how it might feel. And then this noise from the advice business and the loss of the intergenerational context is coupled with what I personally feel and what I have seen to be a very narrow scope of promotional material for breastfeeding, because I actually went to the Royal College of Paediatricians to talk to their infant feeding lead there, and what she said to me is that we've been advertising breastfeeding, essentially been putting out material for 30 years, and the statistics are not changing. And that material has all been aimed at mothers. And that, essentially, is one of the really big problems, is that we can't change the breastfeeding statistics by just talking to one group. Actually, it's a community that needs to be spoken to. So lack of visibility is kind of central within these three issues. And that lack of visibility joins together with a continuation of negative cultural values around breastfeeding, which I think is very much fed by the machinery of the infant parenting manuals, a certain amount of prejudice, which is a cultural prejudice towards the exposure of flesh and why do you need to breastfeed when we've got formula, and just inherited issues. And that does contribute to the social isolation and alienation of breastfeeding mothers. This is a cultural problem that I would definitely identify. And I live in Brighton, where women literally will lift their tops up to breastfeed. It's incredibly acceptable to breastfeed in public, and I've run workshops about breastfeeding in public, and women have sat there and said, breastfeeding in public is not the problem. Breastfeeding in front of my parents is the problem. Breastfeeding in front of my brother-in-law, my father, my partner, my sister, my mother-in-law, these are the people that are influencing mothers, not the wider public. In many ways, the wider public have an opinion, but it's not nearly as important to those mothers as the people who are their mentors, essentially, who they rely on most when they've just had a baby. So I've called this generally a lack of social concern for breastfeeding mothers, because I do see this as a massive issue. It's kind of tricky when I present my work to the art world, because a lot of people in the art world are quite privileged, and they'll say, oh, breastfeeding, that's just for like white middle class. Isn't that a lifestyle choice? Why is this a political issue? You know, they don't understand that there's this massive health inequalities going on. And so this lack of social concern for breastfeeding mothers comes into a kind of complacency around whether or not it doesn't matter if you breast, you know, when I had loads of problems breastfeeding, people would say to me, it doesn't matter if you, you only need to breastfeed for 6 weeks. It's not really important after that. You know, I had all these kind of messages which were about how breastfeeding is really quite irrelevant, how if I want to carry on breastfeeding, then that's really an indulgence on my part. Despite the fact that I was experiencing great agonising emotional pain by not, you know, by having all these problems, people misinterpreted that. I mean, there's really interesting research coming out from Amy Brown about these messages. And a lot of it I would describe as a lack of social concern for breastfeeding mothers. I presented this work to a massive group of researchers and people, and I have spoken to researchers that are researching shaming and bottle shaming. There's really interesting research going on in Brighton. But the fact is that breastfeeding mothers, mothers who are exclusively breastfeeding at 6 months, are 1%. So they are a very tiny minority. And the majority are bottle feeding mothers. And so basically, to breastfeed is to divert from what's normal, and it is non-conformist. And if we start to understand it in those terms, then we start to understand the big question, which is, why do women mix feed? Why do women stop breastfeeding? Why do women not continue? You know, it all becomes quite logical, because all of us want to fit in. And actually, despite perhaps what health practitioners think, women are under a relentless pressure to stop breastfeeding culturally. So whatever message we put out there, if we're not meeting the size of that cultural message to stop, it's never going to work. And that's why it hasn't really worked 30 years. So, you know, this is just running through pretty much what I've just said. The phrase renormalising is very popular in the sort of selfie, brelfie, grassroots Instagram kind of breastfeeding culture that's kind of really a big international movement of women supporting each other and trying to empower their decision to breastfeed. But, yeah, this is what I feel has basically slowed the process down. So my project is about changing the expectations of parenting sort of fundamentally, really broadening the discussion around breastfeeding to move beyond these very polarised positions which are that don't do justice to either the research that's out there or the mothers who are struggling with these issues. Deepening engagement, which means speaking to people about this in such a way that they can really think about it and be open to the conversation and feel heard, and also obviously increasing visibility at the same time. That's almost the easiest thing to do compared to the others. So in terms of changing expectations, showing a diverse range of ethnicities, ages, weights and styles of dress. You'll see that my slides are basically a representation of the ethnicities of Brighton, but I'm looking to do the same process in Coventry and elsewhere. Showing mothers feeding all ages of children and combinations of children. Another thing is that we only ever see in pictures women breastfeeding babies. So, you know, hence women don't identify with breastfeeding toddlers. It's still seen as very weird. Showing different moods, states of minds, attitudes. You know, some women are... breastfeeding can be really boring and it takes a lot of time, and women are not always looking incredibly smiley and happy when they're doing it. They're often looking a bit distracted and bored and like they want to be somewhere else, or maybe they're having a really amazing thought and they're thinking about something else. It's bringing that kind of almost broadness of who women are into breastfeeding, you know, so they're not just being there being boobs breastfeeding, they're actually being themselves breastfeeding. They're being a real whole person within a you know, within their life breastfeeding. And the last part of the work is trying to recreate a circle of women feeding together, because I had the idea at the beginning is I just really wanted to be able to myself sit in a circle of women breastfeeding. And I think offering that to people of all ages within the community is an amazingly powerful experience for them, even if it's done virtually. Some stills from the various exhibitions that I did. So these are the 23 mothers that I photographed. Some newborns, some older children. Some women are very, as I say, sort of distracted. Some are struggling a bit. Some are incredibly serene. I mean, this woman was a moment, I have to say, in quite a busy shoot. But the fact that she sat there and found that moment, I thought was really wonderful. My method of photographing them was just to take a picture every 4 seconds. So I basically didn't shoot them at all. I didn't put the camera in their face. The camera's in one position. And I just sat there, and they were invited to feed. The lights were quite low, and children loved it, and it was just a feeding session that I photographed. There are some smiling women. I had to add a couple of smiling women. I had a bit of a criticism, there weren't enough. But there is some joy in breastfeeding, of course, but there's also some sadness and some sorrow. This mother has lost the baby before this baby and is actually grieving through the process of breastfeeding. And this is an older child posing as a baby. This mother is a tandem feeder, and prior to this child she was feeding a baby, and then this child hopped onto her lap and wanted to be held like a baby. And I think showing those relationships with older children who are being breastfed is really, really important. It's, I feel like on the breastfeeding journey, women are just being shown like five steps. Here you go. You've got just get to a week, get 6 weeks. And I know psychologically that might be what women need, but it's also amazing to see, you know, there in the distance, a landscape that they can cover, a whole road they can take, a whole brilliant kind of journey that they can be on with not just one child, but maybe several children. I don't know what's happened to that one. It's going to be squashed. When I had a certain number of women, I started to recruit women I felt weren't being represented. I wanted, women with tattoos. And I'm also looking in Coventry to have a teenage mum and a woman with a headscarf. It's been harder for me to find in Brighton. But, you know, it's very important to have really as broad a group as possible. This is showing the work in a kind of community art centre where I created a breastfeeding hub. And so the carpet and the beanbags are part of the exhibition. There's a choice of either watching the animated piece or watching interviews. And people came into this space and were invited to talk. And there was also a programme of talks around it. This is notes from a workshop. We did, this workshop was breastfeeding in public. And lots of mothers with quite young babies. Again, lots of talk about mother-in-laws. And this is a talk that I did with Lucilla Newell, who's written a number of blog posts for my project website. And they look at things like breastfeeding in the environment, breastfeeding and work, breastfeeding and time, which I'm really interested in. So just some findings. The strongest response I had was from men aged 70 plus. I find that, that was a huge surprise to me. When I set out to make the work, I was probably literally making it for other breastfeeding mothers. And then when I showed it, the big responses came from teenagers and men over the age of 70, some of whom would literally cry in the exhibition. I mean, the emotions that were expressed were amazing. The galleries also reported that their demographics were much wider than normal. There's loads more children coming into the gallery than normal. Lots of families coming in, lots of fathers coming with babies, just much broader than typical gallery setting. In terms of broadening discussions, I've just written in here some ideas around what that might be. Creating a framework for thinking about issues not solely based on the health of the child, discussing a wide range of topics. So that's what I tried to do with the blog posts, looking at history, politics and public policy. So for example, I'm interested in research around public space and how it's designed, and policy making, which is why I've been going to the All Party Parliamentary Group, and also the history of it is fascinating. And I'm really interested in learning from cultures where breastfeeding is not denormalised, because in the interviews that I've done, there are some women, for example, there's a Brazilian woman, Bethania, who was herself breastfed, comes from a breastfeeding culture, who has, I mean, to me it's completely obvious, an utterly different attitude towards breastfeeding to the British women that I interview. And I would say that is slightly true of most of the black and minority ethnic women that I interviewed, that they have a much less complicated relationship with it. In fact, there's a woman from Nigeria at the talk who was just like, I don't understand, what is all this talk, you know? And listening to everyone and creating a space for listening. So just a little bit about the interviews. The interviews had massive, for an artist, massive viewing figures. Each interview I put up quadrupled the previous interview's viewing figures. So I stopped at roughly about 30,000 on the last video. I have got others to put up, but I wanted to actually test YouTube to see how the algorithms work. If you don't post all the time, do they continue to climb? So that's an amazing route for dissemination and getting the audience bigger than just the location. These are 5-minute podcasts. The average watch time is a minute. And it led to very high web volume on the project website. Just a quick bit about this is the project website. Some more about creating knowledge exchange between researchers and mothers. I think that is a really crucial role of the project. And curating conversations across disciplines. So for example, I'm kind of, because I'm moving around all these different breastfeeding places, Tower Hamlets, Coventry, Liverpool, Wakefield, Birmingham, I'm hearing about clinical research going in different places across different departments, and often people don't really know what's happening. For example, there's people researching breastfeeding in relation to lure in obviously psychology, and then as well as all the clinical work in public space, design, anthropology, and building bridges between the NHS team. So in Coventry, for example, I'm working with the NHS team, the academics at the clinical trials unit, the local hospital, and the grassroots network, and the libraries. So the idea is to bring the video to photograph, set up a studio, photograph the women breastfeeding, use those as stills for the hospital, and then interview them and put that in the local libraries. So you and then find a community space for stills and videos. So just to have an intervention in the city, which is what I'd like to do in Liverpool. I'd like to photograph Liverpool women breastfeeding, interview a group, show that work in one of the hospitals, and then have a community space like the libraries or children's centres where that is also disseminated, and it can be part of a process where women are recruited through the same stakeholders. Some people from the groups I'm working with in Coventry and Tower Hamlets, and this is just a quick bit about the animation I described. The animation, I do think, is a really important part. This is only a one-minute clip. I just want you to see that it's got music. It's a shame it's cut the phone off. I don't know why it's done that. So you can see it's animated stills, it's accompanied by music, it's a four-screen installation, so viewers come into quite a dark space, and the music builds. And the music has been written to go with this timepiece, which grows as the women breastfeed. So this is an immersive piece. Here it is installed in a church. It allows me to work with scale. And again, men over 60, strongest response, women under 20, women and men under 20. But this is a way of, when you're saying about how do you reach people, how do you help them make decisions about behavioural change in such a fast-moving, noisy environment? Well, if you put someone for 5 minutes into an installation, they are subject to such a sensory overload that it affects them on levels that they can't control. And I mean, if they don't like it, they can walk out. But what I found was people just stayed and stayed and stayed and stayed. And the numbers, again, the traffic was enormously high for this gallery. The message slips under the established defence mechanisms, is my opinion. Because people are given time for contemplation. And that kind of environment changes the way people behave, brings their defences down. Music is deeply emotional. And it's also apparently a very oxytocin-rich environment. So breastfeeding mothers who were in this environment were producing spontaneously milk by watching these other women feed, which I think is also quite an interesting, has interesting possibilities for pumping rooms and other things in workplaces. So that's a little bit I've told you about the City of Culture collaboration. And there's my stuff at the end.
That was fascinating. It's not a talk like we've had before in these meetings.
That's good. An artist should definitely not be like the other talks.
Any questions?